Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
Local author Pam Boyer writes under the name Pamela Dean. She was raised in Reading and moved to Chico after graduating from high school. She'd planned to attend Butte College and transfer to Chico State to become a teacher. But while she was at Butte, she met people who worked as seasonal firefighters with the Forest Service. Pam Boyer got a position on an engine crew in Modoc National Forest in Aden. She worked on an engine 2 years and would have continued if she had not been injured. She finished a degree in fire science at Butte and got an EMT certificate and used it to become a medical assistant working for various walk-in clinics and doctors in Chico. She has used her experiences to write her first novel, and I love her still. Pam Boyer, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, your cover is interesting, and usually there's an illustrator. You had an illustrator and a designer.
Yes. Virginia Wright is a local artist, and she painted with watercolor the cover for me. And then I used a company called Fiverr, that's an online agency that just helped put the title on.
So did you have any input, or you just said, okay, it's up to you guys who know what you're doing?
With Virginia and I worked really closely together. She knew I wanted the cabin, which plays an important part of the story. And then the lady on Fiverr, I just kind of told her what I wanted, and she gave me a couple of options to choose from, and this is the one that I liked.
Well, in my imagination, when I look at that, I think, oh, that must be Aden.
Yeah, it is.
And for people who aren't familiar with it, it's such a small town. Tell the listeners where Aden is.
Aden is in the northeastern part of California, north, very, very north corner. It's up past kind of by Susanville, if Susanville is a little bit more common for people, and a little bit lower than Alturas. So it's like about an hour and a half away from Susanville and an hour and a half away from Alturas.
So I'm looking at your cover and I think, oh, there's a cabin. It must be in Aden. And then I'm reading your story and I'm thinking, oh, this sounds like it's autobiographical. So I kept wondering when I was reading, okay, where's the line between what Pam is inventing and what she actually experienced as a firefighter or any other experience?
Well, yeah, I definitely used some of my experiences to create the scenes, but the character Kenny, who's the female firefighter, is a lot more tough than I was.
And you know what else I admired about this main character is, and I wondered if it's true for you, are you good at home improvement projects?
No, I wish I was.
Oh, okay. That's like, yeah. Well, and then Engine 4 out of Aden, your character does that, which I figured, well, that sounds like that's more likely.
Yes, that was very true. Now it's called Engine 44, but when I was on it, it was Engine 4.
Well, you have an interesting setup for your book because usually a book, the whole thing is told in first person or third person, and you have two people talking. And so we have to pay attention, okay, is this I the guy or is this guy the woman you just mentioned? And so why don't you start your first chapter? Actually, before the first chapter, there's a poem. And it's labeled Cowboy Poetry, Beyond the Fence Line. And we don't know who wrote this poem. It's just a couple of initials. And this cowboy poetry wasn't published until 1950, and your story starts in 1988. So that's kind of mysterious.
Yeah.
So before your chapter one, there's a poem. Now, how do you start your first chapter? And who is this talking? Who's the I?
So the first chapter is Kenny's point of view, and it says, Kenny, hurry it up. We leave in 10, Captain Henderson yells from inside the engine bay. Almost finished. Why don't you check on the rest of the crew instead of yelling at me? I put my red bag up top an hour ago. I'm busy restocking compartment D, I say, then mutter under my breath. I know how much that matters. I shove another roll of toilet paper into the already full compartment and slam the lid shut, twisting the lock in place.
This is my guest, Pam Boyer. And she is reading from her book, And I Love Her Still. And the title's in the first person, too. Hmm. And I love her still. So that's kind of a mystery that we don't know who is saying that. And I love her still. So we meet this main character named Kenny. And this is taking place in Modoc National Forest in 1988, which is when you started.
No, I was actually, I think it was 1990 when I started with the Forest Service. So, yeah, close, but.
So, why don't you continue and read us a little bit more about what Kenny is saying?
So far, this year's fire season has been a lot easier with all the training I did in the off season. Climbing hills with my web gear and saw didn't slow me down like it did last year, and I delighted in beating the rest of the crew to the top. I can barrel up the hill, easily passing most of the other guys. Our first fire this season was a small half acre at the top of a ridge. Another engine had been sent to assist, and I could see the judgy looks when I hopped out of the crew cab. Once people work with me, they see what I can do. But before that, there's all sorts of eye-rolling and snickers, especially when I put on my chaps and hoist my saw to my shoulder. They certainly don't expect me to be a Sawyer.
And now this Sawyer is not a name. This is, and I'm getting, it's a, you were a Sawyer, which means you...
So I was not. A Sawyer is the person who runs the chainsaw on the fires, and it is really uncommon for there to be women Sawyers, but there are today and back then as well. I learned how to use a chainsaw, but I certainly wasn't as talented as Kenny is.
But you probably experienced some of the, you said eye rolling. Mm-hmm. So, a girl's going to do this?
Yeah, I got that a lot.
So what about this Forest Service station?
Big Valley Ranger District is a small Forest Service station that has a fire crew, a brush disposal crew, a fire prevention truck, and other non-fire-related Forest Service employees. The U.S. Department of Forestry has fire engines to protect their natural resources, but don't like to have actual fire stations, so we share our space with archaeologists, biologists, and foresters. This is my third year doing fire, but only my first as a full-time employee instead of just a seasonal firefighter. I'm going to go through the Joint Apprentice Committee Academy, also known as the Jack Academy, to become an engineer after this season, and I just got my AAS in fire science and my EMT certificate. I love this job so much. Most of the people I work with have become like family.
You know, I think that's true for a lot of jobs, that when you work with people, and particularly circumstances like this, they become like family.
Yes, for sure.
And so you are describing, I'm assuming everything you just were saying is actual fact.
Yes.
And true.
That for me was true.
That's what I would think. So this, you tell us about this fire district, and then you have this character, I'm saying you, now let me go back to your character that you say is Kenny. And when we first see there's somebody named Kenny, we thought, well, that's a guy's name, short for Kenneth, but that's not true.
Right.
And your character is not very pleased if somebody calls her by her full name.
No one calls me Kendra. I'm not even sure how he found out that's my real name. I've always gone by Kenny. My family, my friends, and my teachers call me Kenny. No one but him calls me Kendra, and it makes my skin crawl.
So these are words, again, this chapter is told in the first person. This is your main character, the woman who likes to be called Kenny. And this guy that she doesn't like doesn't even call her by the name she prefers. Now, you also mentioned in here archaeology office. So that was the case? You had archaeologists there?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, there's up in the Modoc is very close to the Lava Bed National Monument. And so there was quite a few active digs going on when I worked up there.
Yeah, so that was, I didn't realize that. That kind of was a surprise. So what does Kenny, I almost said Kendra, what does Kendra, Kenny do as far as, how does she get along with the archaeologist?
Pretty good. I stick my head into the archaeology office and smile at the boys. Hey, we're about ready to leave. You guys going to feed Fred while we're gone, right? Hey, Kenny. Yeah, Rick's going to go on a dig, but I'll be here the whole time. Food and water bowls still out by the hose racks? Neil asks. Yeah, thanks, Neil. So, new dig, huh, Rick? where are you headed?
So if it's a food dish and a water dish, then we're talking about a little animal.
Yes, Fred the fire cat.
So they have a fire cat there in that in the office.
Yes.
There with the office. So you are being sent, I'm the main character.
Kenny.
Like I say, it's sometimes hard for me to make the distinction between you and the main character. So the main character says, we're being sent to a fire, and what about this fire?
So we're being sent to a fire that, at last check, was over 300 acres. They only have about 25% containment, so they started calling in more resources. The fire is over on the Tahoe National Forest. It's an area I'm unfamiliar with, but Ted's worked there when he first started. I know it's a similar elevation to here, and there's a lot of hills. I'm ready and grateful to have the distraction of a big fire. I don't mind the little projects we do around the station or the medical calls we go on. They all make the job interesting, but going off forest to a big fire is my favorite. Fire camp is so cool. I love everything about it. It's like camping with 300 of your closest friends while also getting to cut down trees and hike. I mean, sure, there's the whole fire thing, and I'll never tell my mom this, but the fire is undeniably the best part. I know my parents were worried when I told them about this opportunity, but after the first season, they realized I was hooked. My dad was super excited about me getting to work with the chainsaw. He taught me how to use one when I was in high school. My aunt's property had a few trees that needed to be taken down, and since my Uncle George had passed, there was no one to take care of it. My dad couldn't, and he didn't want to pay for somebody to come up and go to the property, so he taught me. I was already using a lot of power tools for my woodworking, so the saw wasn't all that different. I mentioned to Ted that I had a desire to get certified as a sawyer when I first started. He put me through all the training courses, and I quickly progressed to a level C sawyer, meaning I could cut down any size tree. It has become my favorite thing to do on a fire.
This is my guest, Chico, author. She goes by the name her has on her book cover is Pamela Dean, and she's known locally as Pam Boyer. The title of the book she was just reading from, And I Love Her Still. And this chapter is told in the first person because this is the woman that is her main character. But chapter two, and each chapter now has cowboy poetry in the beginning of it.
Yes.
So, and we don't know who wrote this other than just the initials M.S. 1921 is when this poem was written. Okay, so chapter two, we meet another character whose story is told in the first person. And who is this character?
So this is Patrick. No way there is a town out here. I've pulled over so many times to check the map. It's taken twice as long as it should have. I pulled onto Highway 299, like the map said, and it should be a straight shot. But this highway is also called 139 for some odd reason. The first time I passed that sign, I had a minor heart attack. I'm probably not making the best decisions on the 4 hours of horrible sleep I had last night. Leaving Seattle yesterday and driving as far as I could did not land me in town with a hotel like I had envisioned. Since there's nothing out here, I slept in the parking lot of a campground in the back seat of my car because I was dumb enough to believe I'd just be able to get a hotel room somewhere when I was tired. That's true in the civilized world. Clearly, I have left that region. So here I am trying to find Aiden, California, where I'm going to the Frosty to ask for Jenny. She has the keys to my great Uncle Mitchell's house, which now belongs to me. I'm still trying to process all of this. When I first got the letter from the attorney out of Alturas, I thought for sure it was a mistake, and I threw it away. I didn't know an Uncle Mitchell or remember either of my parents ever talking about him, so it was probably a different Patrick Smith they were after. A week later, I received another letter and a message on my answering machine asking me to please call back as soon as possible. That phone call changed everything. So here I am, driving out to the middle of nowhere to take ownership of a ranch. I guess I have nothing else better to do since I haven't been able to come up with one decent book proposal in over a year. I've submitted nothing, gone completely silent, dropped off the radar. Now I'm probably going to be listed as a missing person since I locked up my house in Seattle and walked away. Not like I had anyone to tell I was leaving. The guy at the corner coffee shop might miss me and my pen tapping. I think he was fond of my rhythm and the occasional pen toss I would throw in to keep him guessing. He stared at me a lot. He will probably miss me, but no one else will. I'm not running away. I'm running towards something. That's what I'm telling myself, at least.
Now, this voice is a different voice from chapter one, because, Pamela, when you were reading the last part, the woman was saying things that I think, yeah, this sounds just like this is what Pam experienced when she was a firefighter. But now chapter two, this Patrick guy, and I'm chuckling because the first clue that we kind of have about it, one of the clues about his personality, he said, I had a minor heart attack when I passed that sign. So here's a guy, he had a minor heart attack because he passed a sign. Right. And so that's kind of a clue that maybe this guy's a hypochondriac.
Maybe a little. He's a little ridiculous.
So he goes out, and we don't know what he looks like, but later on we find out, oh, he's a handsome guy. And he looks like a professor because he's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So this this guy is coming from Seattle to this place that he has inherited, and he does not know, who is this guy Mitchell that's given me this ranch? And so then what continues in Patrick's story?
So an hour later, I pull into, quote, town. A few minutes ago, I was actually worried I wouldn't be able to find the Frosty, but like the attorney said, you can't miss it. Seriously, there are three buildings on this main street, which is also the highway, 299 or 139 or whatever. There's a big building that looks like it was built during the gold rush or something. It has a large wooden porch and two doors, one leading into the town store and the other the town bar. Seriously, the bar is called The Bar. The lettering is kind of faded, too, like no one cares enough to retouch the paint. I hope it's actually open because I know I will need a drink tonight. Down the street a little is the Frosty, a run-down burger joint with a large cutout of a soft-serve ice cream cone. It looks like that sign is cared for a little more, but it's still seen better days. Next to that is a U.S. Forest Service station with a sign that says Big Valley Ranger District. There's another sign that says Fire Danger Today, High. Smokey the Bear is waving like he's trying to reassure you that while the forest may ignite soon, it's going to be okay.
This is Chico, author Pam Boyer. I pause because she writes under the name Pamela Dean. Pam Boyer reading from And I Love Her Still. Pam Boyer and I are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about her novel, And I Love Her Still. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman, and I'm back with my guest, local author Pam Boyer, who has written a novel, And I Love Her Still, about a firefighter. So we meet this guy who's coming into town. He doesn't know what to expect, this little town of Aden, and he mentions highway numbers. And so, Pam, I looked it up. So Aden, I'm not familiar with that. So I looked up on a map. Sure enough, these are all true. Everything you say about this place is true. And so I'm assuming you're familiar with Aden yourself.
Yes, I worked there when I was in the Forest Service. It's true, but, you know, I say that in the very beginning, in the first part of the foreword. I mentioned that while it's a very real place, my description of it is fictional.
In fact, I mentioned that the first thing you have is a poem. Each chapter starts with a poem, but you also have a note at the beginning of your book, too, from you, and you say that this Modoc National Forest is really there, and the towns like Aden are real places, and you say, my description of it is mostly fictional, And then the book of cowboy poetry that shows up the first of every chapter, cowboy poetry, is entirely fictional as well. So that must mean you're the poet that wrote these poems?
Yes.
We don't know that.
Well.
Because it has one of the characters.
Oh, right.
I don't want to give that away.
No, it's okay. It's all right. Yes, but people, when I had my beta readers looking at it, that was a question I got a lot, was where I found the cowboy poetry. And so I wanted to make it clear that it's a fictional book of cowboy poetry.
In fact, I've been tempted to, when I say your name, author, I've almost said author and poet. But I kind of didn't want to give away the surprise. But you're the poet. Do you have a favorite poem that you wrote for your book?
Yeah. Let's see. That's hard because the poems start to mean more as you go through. Mm-hmm. But... No, I don't think I do have a favorite because they all mean something to me for different reasons throughout the story.
And they are different, too.
Yeah.
The poems have a different structure and so on.
Yeah.
Now, there's something that the character, it just gets mentioned in passing, but I focused on the fact that Merle Haggard is mentioned. He's listening to this music, then, oh, that must be Merle Haggard. And do you know why that interested me? Do you know he earned property near Reading? Merle Haggard did.
Oh, right.
So I thought, oh, there's a kind of a local hero in her book that you may not have even realized.
Yeah, no, but that was music that was playing during that time when I was up there. And that was actually my first introduction to country music was when I got into Fire. I started listening to it more and more because that was up there in Aden, that was what was popular. So I was like, well, I actually really like that. Same thing with the cowboy poetry. I learned about cowboy poetry when I was a firefighter and working with those people.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, like I say, Merle Haggard owned property up near Reading, so I thought, well, that's appropriate.
It worked out.
So this guy, Patrick, is a writer. He comes down from Seattle. And he hasn't just written a couple books. He's written, how many did you tell us he's written?
I think he's written 12 books.
Yeah, in 12 years.
In 12
so that's a book
years.
A year.
Yeah.
So he's a serious writer, but where is he now?
Yeah,
in
little,
the story.
He's a little lost. He's not really sure what he's going to do with his life now.
Yeah, there comes that writer's block.
Yeah.
So he's kind of looking for ways to get past that. Yeah. And then he... you're thinking, well, he studied writing when he was at the university, but no, he didn't. I hesitate to tell too much about him, but she's surprised, too, at what she learns, this main character, she, meaning Kenny. And what did she learn about him that surprised her?
Well, she learns that his major was geography.
Geography!
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense to her, but it did to him, because then he could write about the places that his character would go to, so...
And there's a character in your story, too, named Luke. And Patrick comes down from Seattle. He's a writer. And he is flattered because what does he learn about Luke?
Oh, my goodness. So Luke is one of his biggest fans. Absolutely voracious reader. And I knew somebody like this when I was in Fire that always had a book. That if in their backpack, anytime I'd see them with a break, they were reading a book. And so that inspired me for the Luke character. And Luke is just enamored with Patrick.
And again, Patrick is the writer. Mm-hmm. And I'm hesitating to reveal too much, but Patrick inherits this ranch. He doesn't know anything about ranching, but he starts his what's the condition of the house that he has inherited?
It's definitely better than he thought it would be. It's very well cared for. And one of the things he learns about his uncle is that he was a voracious reader. He has a huge library of books.
And who, of all people, was going to help him build more bookshelves?
Maybe that was Kenny.
Because she's very handy
yes.
with home improvement skills.
Yes, she
you
is.
Say, that's not you. There's, no. there's the line.
No, that's the line.
But here she is, and they were going to put some more bookshelves in. Well, what happened to his uncle? Why? And how old was his uncle?
His uncle was 94 when he passed, and he was kind of a town icon. And you learn that early on in the story and then learn more about it as the book goes on. But everybody in town loved Patrick's uncle, including Kenny. She considered him one of her best friends. So to lose him was very hard.
Yeah, so we come to like this uncle, his great uncle, that Patrick inherits this ranch. God, I don't know what to do with a ranch, but maybe it can provide material for me to write. Now, again, there's so many interesting things that I don't want to spoil for the reader about where the title comes from, And I Love Her Still, because we've got two people in this book who are using the first person, I this, I that. And so we start wondering, well, which I is this? And I love her still. So I won't spoil that for them. But is there anything else that you would like listeners to know that won't be spoiling any of the fun for them? Because it is a fun read.
Oh, well, thank you. Let's see. Well, one of my favorite characters is Rusty. And at first, I've had several people tell me that they didn't like him. And I tell them to just wait and just hear him out. And then he becomes their favorite as well. I think that Rusty is probably one of the most interesting people in the book.
Well, you know, speaking of characters that you maybe change your mind about, even with Kenny, like the first page, I thought, well, who is this woman? She's not very likable. And I'm sure you intended it that way.
Yes.
And what is about her personality that people, in first starting reading about her, think, well, I don't think I like her.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think being in fire, being a woman in fire, and having you have to come across a little bit more tough and you know, prove yourself, and you have grit, and, you know, you certainly can't be girly, and you can't, I don't know. Kenny just sort of embodied everything that I wanted to show people when I first started. I was so worried about people not trusting that I could do the job that I made sure that they knew I could. And I went on, I started before I started school, I started with the fire job and enjoyed it so much, then I went and got my degree. And I wanted to be able to tell people I got the job under something that was called consent decree. The Forest Service was mandated through a lawsuit to hire X number amount of women. So I was hired under that. And I wanted to be able to say, I may have gotten the job because I'm a woman, but I kept it because I was a good firefighter. So it was really important for me to have the degree, the knowledge to back it up, and then be, you know, an asset to the engine. That's why I got my EMT. The first time I went to a vehicle accident, because we did respond to those, and just standing there holding a stop sign, I didn't feel like I was being very useful. I hated that feeling, so I wanted to be able to help the patients and then went on.
You made the point earlier that they felt the people you work with felt like family.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you're going to be relying on each other, and you wanted to be reliable. Yeah. And your character, too, which is why at first she comes across as, well, I don't think I like her.
Right.
But you have to be strong and reliable and trustworthy, and because you've got these people like family that are relying on you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have to know that you're not going to just be lazy or get tired or give up, or and there's no complaining. You know, you just...
And physically fit. Your
right.
character makes sure she stays physically fit.
Yep.
And you probably felt that way too, didn't
you?
Oh,
definitely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You didn't want to feel weak or peer weak, especially that there was... I was lucky, and I worked on an engine that had a female engineer, so... And then I had two other girls on the engine at the same time as me. We didn't always work the same time, but there was one day where we ended up, it was all girls on the engine crew. And, you know, we joked about, oh my gosh, this is like a first, but it was where we were unusual, but there were other places around the whole United States that was a more common thing. So,
Yeah. Well, I think readers will find your book very interesting and fun.
I hope so.
And let me remind listeners that the title of your book is And I Love Her Still. And I won't give away because the last chapter, I won't give away how it turns out.
Okay.
The ending of the story of these characters.
Yes.
But again, the title is And I Love Her Still. And the author goes by the name Pamela Dean on the book. Chico community might know her as Pam Boyer. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you for having me.
After a break, I'll be back with a new guest, bookstore owner Muir Hughes, who will tell us the services she offers at her bookstore. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. My next guest is not an author, but she supports local authors. She, along with her husband, Josh Mills, is co-owner of the bookstore in downtown Chico. And her name is Muir, M-U-I-R, as in the famous John Muir. Her name is Muir Hughes. Muir, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You know, I just so appreciate what you and Josh have done. How did you ever get into the bookstore business?
I've always loved books. In fact, Josh and I really met in the bookstore. That's how we first got to know each other many years ago. We've been married over 20 years now. And the store opened in 1976 from a previous owner. And Josh started working there when he was 18 years old.
Oh, my.
So he's been there a long time. And we both share a love of books and knowledge and curiosity. And so it's really the perfect place for us.
Again, my guest is Muir Hughes. She and her husband own the bookstore in downtown Chico. Now, it's just called the bookstore. And what kind of books would we expect to find there?
I think it sums up how many books we have, everything under the sun. We don't have a particular category. Anybody that's interested in anything at all can walk through the doors and we can help them find what they're looking for.
Do you know, it's a small town in France that has a huge bookstore, and it has all kinds of books. And people come from all around to go into this bookstore that's so large. So I'm just imagining somebody, maybe they live up in Reading, and they think, golly, that sounds like an interesting place to go. So how would you serve some people who maybe don't live in downtown, don't live in Chico?
Right. We have a lot of local customers, but many of our customers come from out of town, not just in the North State, but all over the world. Actually, people come into the bookstore. And for people who haven't worked in a bookstore, it's one of the most amazing experiences you can imagine because of the conversations that we have. Books is a different type of object. It's not a regular retail purchase. It's about curiosity. It's about becoming educated. It's about escape. So everyone is looking for something different. And if somebody comes from Reading, we're going to be able to help them find what they want.
Well, you just are an example yourself of what you might find in a bookstore that is more... I sort of say more important. Books are very important to me, too, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. But what a romantic story that you met your husband in a bookstore. And it was the bookstore here in Chico.
It was right here in Chico, yeah. We had crossed paths a few times, but it was by going into the bookstore and sort of our love of literature that kindled a romance. So it's perfect that years later, here we are. And we've had other romances flourish in the bookstore as well. Some wedding portraits in the store, people who have met in the bookstore. Bookstores are amazing community places. And people who want a safe place to explore ideas, it's the complete opposite of our sort of social media Google world. You might come in, you have no idea what you're looking for, you pull something off the shelf, and maybe that sets you in a whole new direction. There's life-changing literature out there, and we would just encourage anybody to come into a bookstore and browse.
Well, you mentioned this community because people now have their eyes on their devices.
Yes.
And to go into a bookstore, Maybe you meet somebody who shares your interest in books, for example. Mm-hmm. Also, you are next door to a wonderful coffee shop that has served this community for years.
Yes,
also,
the Upper Crust is so popular. Lines out the doors. Holiday, you can't even get in there. They're selling so many pies or cakes or whatnot. We feel really lucky to be in downtown Chico. It's a beautiful place to be. You have every type of community member in downtown. You can walk several blocks and find wonderful food to eat, new clothing, books, and something like the Upper Crust Cafe. There's lots of good coffee downtown.
My guest is Muir Hughes, and she is co-owner, along with her husband, Josh Mills, of the bookstore in downtown Chico. So you offer services to the community. I so appreciate what you do for the community. And now, lately, I've been worried because parking has gotten expensive. And what's good news in that department?
Yeah. So we do have some new kiosks downtown that are frustrating for people. But really, fortunately, right now, this is a great place, great time to come down and shop. The city is offering 2 hours of free parking. You don't have to deal with any meters, any kiosks, just park. You can shop for 2 hours, and it's going to be really nice and convenient for everybody that wants to come downtown.
You know, something else, there are many things that I appreciate about Upper Crust employees. They are some of the nicest people, and I always appreciate their employees and yours also. But you don't really need to do much because people just like to browse and wander.
They do, and sometimes we do a lot.
didn't mean to imply that. But they might not need to interact. They might just want to come in and find the books
and look around. There's plenty to see in the store. We also have interesting, arts and crafts and some historical items on display. There's some museum qualities to certain aspects of the aesthetics of the store. But then we also have some of the best sellers that are new and available. So it does, hit a lot of levels for people.
So you have new books and used books.
We do.
And you have survived when it was, I say was because I hope it's in the past, that bookstores had a really tough time. People just went online or read PDFs. And I really like a real book I can hold in my hands and flip back to the pages before. And so do you think you have a secret as to how you and Josh kept the bookstore alive for all of us here in the community when times were tough for bookstores in general?
Right. I mean, we work a lot of hours, but I think that people love reading. Not everybody reads, but many people do. And there's nothing like having a book in hand. And when you have a tangible object, you actually retain more information. They've done a lot of studies that if you're reading something online, you just don't retain as much. And the smell of the paper, all of those sensory aspects contribute to the experience of reading a real book.
I so agree with you. Because now who was that character? So you flip back a few pages. Oh, that's who that was.
Yes.
And it's hard to do that. Not that PDFs have their purpose. I don't mean that. But I also, if I want to look back at something, a book has a left and right side. And I remember, that was on the left-hand side of the page, down two paragraphs. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that if I'm reading on a device.
Right. Yeah, that visual tracking is different. I think it's a lot better.
So suppose there's a book. In fact, I just visited family, and they had a book. I'd love a copy of this.
Yes.
So I could go to you and say, hey, Muir, would you order me this book?
Yes, absolutely. We do order new books for people. We do it every day. And we also have new inventory coming into the store every day. So sometimes we have exactly what you're looking for in stock, and that happens all the time. And if there is a new book and we don't have it in stock yet, we can order it for people, and it comes right away, usually in just a few days.
Another thing that I like, since I like to support local authors, is I walk in and close to the front is a table full of local authors.
Mm-hmm.
And who are some of those kind of ones that just year in and year out people want copies of?
We do have some local authors. The books that people come to over and over again are really books that talk about this local area. So field guides, things like The Wildflowers of Table Mountain or The Birds of Bidwell Park. People really love to have those. They can take it with them when they go explore the local beauty of the area. And they also make great gifts.
One of the attractions of living in this area is our beautiful park.
Yes.
And I think they would, I wonder what kind of bird that is, or I wonder what kind of tree that is. And so they can come down to your store, downtown Chico, the bookstore.
Right.
And get the answers to these questions. Field guide, as you mentioned.
Yeah, field guides are very popular. And in some ways, we're kind of an informal center for tourists. People ask us questions about the history of the area, where to go for lunch, what are some of the sightseeing opportunities, because a bookstore is sort of a container for information.
Well, also, I understand that people who read probably had parents who read. And you provide space for families, don't you?
Yeah, we have a large selection of children's books and young adult books. And so families come in and browse. And some of the early readers, it's so rewarding as a business owner to see these small children, their eyes light up when they have this perfect book that's all theirs. And they take it home and you know they're going to read it over and over. And it's really going to make a difference in how they see life. Actually,
well, you know, they could go to the library and their parents could read them a book there. But I know how children want the same book read over and over and over.
Yes, they do.
So I think parents want to come in and have the actual copy of the book, find the books that the kids like, take it home and read that book over books.
Yes.
Over and over to the children.
Yeah. The books for the children, it's really sweet. I love to see their faces light up.
In fact, when I was just visiting family, my brother pulled out this children's book. He had a video of this mother reading this book to her child, and she was laughing her head off. And it was a joy to watch that.
That's wonderful.
Again, my guest is Muir Hughes. She is co-owner, along with her husband, Josh Mills, of the bookstore in downtown Chico. Now, you mentioned families are welcome, children. You have a children's reading hour?
We've had those before, yes. And sometimes families just come in and they sit and they sample some of the books for their kids and they do a little reading in there, too. Yeah.
You know, I once was asked, I think it was Dr. Seuss's birthday, and some families came into this location. And actually, there was a guy who played music while I read Dr. Seuss to the children.
Oh, sweet.
So maybe there's a musician that would like to come in to some of your events. So you have special events? What's the nature of the special events that you might have?
So we have author readings sometimes. We have poetry readings. We have, around Valentine's Day, we have poetry on demand. People can order a special poem written on an old typewriter.
Oh, my
goodness. That's quite a bit of fun. And we also have pop-ups and sort of random fun events related to arts and literature. And on December 13th, we're going to have a pop-up zine happening. So a couple local zine authors will be there. We like to have something at least once a month that's a little bit special for the public. And we always welcome community input as well.
Well, I was just thinking, somebody mentioned yesterday that his dad always gave his mother chocolate-covered cherries for Valentine's. And so if you like to give your Valentine chocolate, why not add a book? Come in and find a book that your Valentine would like.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, golly. Well, you said that you have poetry readings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can people come in with the poems they've written themselves?
Yeah, so it's not an open mic style. We did that before. But we do this spring time. We'll be starting them up again once a month. They're the third Thursday of the month. And there is about 4 to 5 local poets that read. And they can contact me through the bookstore and let me know if they would like to read, and I can add them to the schedule.
Well, I think some of our poets might like to know about this because at the end of my show, we have poets reading their poetry,
Fabulous.
Local poets. Yeah, so that's another way you support the community. Now, what do you see? Do you see anything down the road? Because you provide so many services and the books are just, you find books that you didn't know you were interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
What do you see down the road for your bookstore?
I mean, I think that we just adapt to what people are looking for, and that there's a consistency there, but then there are things that change, books that become popular. What is the trend? Right now, there's a lot of interest in history and politics. So those types of things come in waves. But alongside that is maybe a renewed interest in escape romance novels. So, you know, what people are asking for is kind of leads the direction a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that. And I had a friend who, when he wanted to just do nothing in particular, he called him, hey, well, I'm going to read a trash novel.
So yes.
He would do that. And I also think to just come in and browse is helpful, because I just recently found a book where it was saying that everything you thought you knew, you were wrong. And so if somebody comes in and, say, picks up a history book, oh, well, I didn't know that. I thought such and such.
Right.
And they discover, oh, I'm so glad I found this book.
Yes.
So somebody comes in and they maybe they ask you, well, where's your section on what's one of the popular sections that people come in and want to look at?
People like fiction. I mean, number one, they like fiction. But right now there is a large demand for history and politics. And so we have a lot of options for that. And books are so great because, you know, we digest so much information, but it's often not very deep information. So it's great to get your hands on a book and sort of get this deeper dive into something that's maybe current, but has a long history. And we can understand sociology and psychology and what's happening right now when we kind of look to the past as well.
You know, also when I'm reading a book, something I'll come across piques my interest in whatever that, maybe join one sentence, but oh, I'd like to know more about that. So I do keep my iPad handy, and I look up some historical figure, like, well, I didn't know this about this person, this historical figure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if I may ask, you're a student at Chico State, you said?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to ask you, probably since the time you were a little kid, you were interested in books.
I've always been interested in books. Yeah, I haven't always had access, so the bookstore has been fabulous for me. But there was a period of time when I was a teenager where I cut class.
Oh.
And I cut class so I could go to the library.
Now, that's a great place to play hooky. I think
yeah.
If I were your teacher, I'd say, right on, Muir. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much for coming in and sharing how you support communities just right here in Chico, Muir.
Thanks, Nancy. Thanks for everything you do.
My guest has been Muir Hughes. She is co-owner, along with her husband, Josh Mills, of the bookstore in downtown Chico. Thank you, Muir.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank my first guest, Pamela Dean Boyer, and she is writing under the name Pamela Dean. Her novel is And I Love Her Still. And next, we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
I call this one Makeup of a Cloud. I saw a helix in the sky, a strand of DNA that reflected the question why. Was the question off the cuff, or was it born of wiser stuff? Was it a pointed question or a trap? Where would the answer take me? Would it take me down a rabbit hole or through a looking glass? When I got there, could I make it back? Would I want to return or explore a forever of possibilities? Right before me, a possibility that all we are is what a cloud is, but it's possible we're not. Someone said that we are what a star is, and somehow it was possible that a collection of star stuff became me, a body made of flesh and fluid, bone and sinew. A machine that allows me to spin out of control and bump into you. And we meet on the street, a whirlwind of passion and ideas, mixing and matching schemas to help us map the universe. But why the cloud, asked me again? Why map just to conquer? Why map to control? Why not simply study and learn? when history has proved that empires burn, all is ephemeral, and all things will go, leaving only an illusory glow, the shine of the void to fall to the meek, theirs to inherit what other souls seek, a bottomless vessel of nothing but time, time threaded through space, that implacable, immovable place, where stars sing and planets race, and there we are, judging the running, when the shell's been spent, the shell from the pistol that began it all, and sent me tumbling, a harrowing, fathomless fall, down a rabbit hole, made of helical DNA, pulled from a cloud.
No place to go. No place to go. The house is gone. The air is black. The ground is polluted. Everything I owned went up in smoke. My memories are all in ashes. All that remains is in my mind. I play the film over and over so I can see everything again. I go back before the fire. I walk from room to room, cherishing all that I see. I took for granted. I know where everything is. If only I could turn back time, have one more chance, one more hour, to go back inside and gather the things I love the most, those precious things I can never replace. I was happy there, but I can never walk through my house again. Ashes to ashes, it's gone. Judith Soto.
Ode to Chocolate. You've got to linger with dark chocolate. It's a waste if you chomp on it real fast, thrust it to the back of your mouth, swirl it with spit, squeeze it down your throat. Then it will feel like melted wax, taste kind of like sugar, and, oh, nothing more. You'll think, huh? What was that? And walk away shrugging. No, concentrate. Bite little pieces thoughtfully. Swish them. You might notice cinnamon, nutmeg, vanilla beans, pepper, sweet thunderstorms on your tongue. Sometimes the soul needs chocolate when we're flung towards chaos and plagues. Bigots, wildfires, and powerful fools leap our way. Cacao lifts us up, unbinds our tongues, helps us stand on the speeding ground. Food of the gods, keep us wild. Paul Belts.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.